The inexplicable. The last unconquered kingdom. Now the time has come to answer the unanswerable. To dance into the abyss. To finally know the mind of God. That's where I come in. I'm Lionel Nimrod, inventor of the interstellar laser ray gun toy, and Mackay off of ABC TV's Star Ark. Come with me now into the swirling mists of human inadequacy. All the world's a stage, or so our primitive ancestors believed. But today, even the mewling, puking schoolboy knows what nonsense that is. The world, a stage? Why, it doesn't even have a curtain. But do we really know any better? This week, me and my team are looking at everything and asking, where does it all come from? Join me, if you dare, in this, my inexplicable world.
Lionel Nimrod's Inexplicable World! And please welcome your explorers of life's mysterious passages.
I'm Stuart Lee.
And my name is Richard Herring. The universe. Why was it made so big when surely a scaled down but equally detailed version would have been exactly the same, but smaller, thus leaving space on the edge for a large 8-screen cinema and 10-pin bowling complex.
Is our search for a philosophical reason for existing just a way of avoiding the fact that we're only here because of two baby shams, a Watney's Party 7, and the reclining front seats of the 1965 Hillman Avenger?
Is time merely a man-made phenomenon invented by the Swiss to sell cuckoo clocks and expensive watches?
Would any of the animal kingdom have existed if the first amoeba had decided it should stay together and see how things worked out despite its differences?
Are men descended from apes, as Darwin says? Or is it, as actor Roddy McDowall believes, that super-intelligent apes are to evolve from men, make us their slaves, and bury the Statue of Liberty in some sand?
And where do babies come from? And why can't we make them stay there so we don't have to look at their crying, dribbling, childish faces?
Since time began, wise people have asked questions not dissimilar to these and tried to understand the universe, plotting the progress of the planets, watching the shifting of the galaxies, and struggling to make groups of stars look like the shapes of farmyard equipment, kitchenware, and Greek people.
But we, the Inexplicable World team, will succeed where these so-called wise people failed, because they wouldn't know the truth if it kept ringing them up and saying, "Hello, it's me here, the truth, remember? Now, are you going to listen or just hang up again like last time?" We'll be pursuing every source available to us: science, philosophy, religion, superstition, hearsay, rumour, gossip and lies.
And we'll be carrying out dangerous and unpredictable live experiments involving highly radioactive materials, large hypodermic needles, and that old woman in the third row who thinks she's here to see the Arthur Askey B-song hour.
So, let's go!
Where does everything come from?
Space. The black, star-studded shroud enveloping our doomed world. But how was this stinking cloak woven? And from what eldritch cotton? Senor, science would have us believe that the creation of this festering sore of filthy rocks that we call the universe sounded something like this.
But in the early 1920s, before the invention of the Dolby Cinema sound system, scientists could not imagine that any sound could be quite as big as that. Then they believed the universe started like this. So, not with a bang, but a whimper. And then with a sort of cough and a pan lid falling on the floor, rolling around a bit.
1927. Three more scientists, meeting secretly in an abandoned shack in the swamps of Cardiff, decide that creation sounds like this.
A 1957, eccentric right-wing one-eyed astronomer Patrick Moore premieres his controversial new hypothesis of the initial sound of creation, the Big Band Theory.
Tragically, Patrick Moore never knew how close he came. Just one letter away from the now-accepted Big Bang Theory.
So now, thanks to the scientists, we know the sound the universe made when it began. They are currently working on a scratch-and-sniff card to tell us what it might have smelled like. So what else has science got to say for itself?
Well, Richard, right now I'm over here on this side of the studio inside a giant fiberglass and tungsten replica of the inside of a tiny super-dense particle tightly packed with matter, magnified to over 20 feet square, yet accurate to a millionth of an inch, and similar in almost every detail to the one which scientists claim exploded, sending atomic particles flying outwards through space. It really is a marvel to behold. So well done to the children of Class 1-3, Fairlands Middle School Cheddar, and thanks for sending that in.
To see if these scientists are right, I'm going to try and create my own universe above the heads of our audience by exploding something else that is tiny, super dense, and packed with matter. A spa laugh time party popper. So, here goes, the possible creation of a new universe live on Radio 4. Well, it doesn't look like any of the streamers are going to arrange themselves into spiraling galaxies. So what our experiment proves is that the now accepted scientific view of creation is wrong.
Yeah, perhaps, Richard, although the party popper used at the dawn of time might have been a better one from a specialist party shop.
Well, turning away from science, perhaps the myths of the ancients from the world's many varied cultures hold the key. After all, the ancients are much older than you and I, and therefore wiser. And they did live in ancient times, which was around when it all started, wasn't it? So what did they think?
The superstitious Catholic French believed that the universe was created when clouds of foul smells solidified into matter. This explains the French national creed of going unwashed at all times, as a mark of respect to smells.
It is an Eskimo myth that the universe was created by a penguin. Ancient scrolls describe how the tiny, super-dense, flightless bird suddenly exploded, hurling atomic particles through the cosmos to form planets and swirling galaxies.
When it's spring again, I'll bring again.
The Dutch still believe their legends, which suggest that the universe is actually yet to be created, and that we're all living in a strange pre-creation hinterland antechamber where nothing happens. Obviously, their beliefs have been shaped somewhat by living in Holland.
The Germans believe that the Earth and all the universe was created especially for them. Or so you'd think by the way they carry on.
So, what about present-day views? Well, we've invited along four people of opposing beliefs for a live discussion in the studio.
First, Dr. Angela Gow-Jones, one of the world's leading cosmologists. Angela, I believe you're a bit unusual amongst scientists in that you don't have a single hair on your body or head.
That's right, but I find that not having to waste any time combing, styling or shaving off my hair has enabled me to devote much more time to science than my colleagues, making me the top expert that I am today.
Yeah, second up is fundamentalist Christian Clive Nuttall.
Hello.
Who believes that God created the world and universe in 6 days, literally. Now, obviously, that is rubbish, but we're obliged to attempt to have a balanced programme.
Well, Mr. Lee, in a free country, you are entitled to your opinion, but I hope you appreciate that, as a result, you will ignite in the fiery pit of hell with burning breeze blocks smashing together on your most secret place. For always.
Yes, thank you. I do appreciate that that will happen. Our third debater is Ian, a bloke I met at a party who managed to corner me in the queue for the toilet and treat me to a four-hour free-form lecture on his carefully thought-out theories of creation.
Yeah, hello again. Do you know if there's any more drink anywhere? I bought a can of Sprite Lager along. I hid it under my coat, but someone nicked it.
And finally, giving the secular humanist atheist point of view, is my 12-year-old nephew, Michael.
Hi, Uncle Stu.
There's certainly a strong family resemblance there, isn't there, Stuart?
Yes, there is.
Shut up.
Right, so let's put our guests into the soundproof debating chamber where they can't hear what's going on in the rest of the programme to see if they can argue their own way to some sort of consensus by the end of the show.
Right, I'm over here now walking through this marvellous 40-foot model of a DNA molecule, the building block of which all living matter is comprised. That's right, it's a mock-up of the endless, twisting, swirling, spiral structure of human DNA, built entirely from matchsticks by out-of-work actor Steve Brown. And Steve's model doubles up as an educational helter-skelter ride for underprivileged children. Come on, kids, let's go! Yeah!
Save me some candy floss, eh, Stu? Meanwhile, I'm down on terra firma with DNA expert Dr. Anton Dawkins.
Yes, hello. As we all know, the DNA molecule contains genetic messages which pass physical characteristics from generation to generation, allowing hereditary problems to be foreseen.
Yes, I remember once I was going to marry a girl I knew, but at the wedding I noticed one of her relatives had ginger hair. So obviously I stopped the service immediately. Actually, it turned out this relative was just someone from her work. But still, best to be on the safe side, eh?
Yes, it is. Now, I believe that DNA also secretly stores race memories, holding possibly the secret of creation itself. So, this evening, in the studio, I'm going to unravel this microscopic strand of human DNA using a high-powered electron microscope, three knitting needles, and my own spit. Ah, and I can see the first message coming through. Yes, it says, Tim, I have taken the kids and gone to live with your brother. Don't try and phone Claire.
Is that it?
Well, as I say, there's an awful lot of stuff in there. We will find more relevant information further in, I'm sure.
Well, we'll come back to Dr. Dawkins later. Now, what are the Christians' ideas? They say God created everything in 6 days, not the 15 billion years that scientists reckon.
Well, 6 days, 15 billion years, what's the difference?
The difference is 14 billion, 999 million, 999,999 years and 359 days. Or 360 days if it was a leap year. That is the difference.
You're just splitting hairs, Stuart. When Christians say day, they just mean a length of time.
Well, it must be difficult arranging to meet them.
But has science then disproved the presence of a God in creation? God might well exist, but where I am troubled in my faith is why would God bother? If I was an all-powerful God, I wouldn't waste my time making a world of stupid people to judge and then reward the most stupid and smug people for believing in me when I obviously don't exist. What I'd make is a really big cheese toasty sandwich with pickle, and then stay in bed all day, making my own amusement.
So what you're saying, Rich, is that if you were the creator, you'd make some cheese, bread, a Breville toaster and a piece of old rag.
Well, Stuart, it takes all sorts to make a world, doesn't it?
Let's go back to the ongoing debate.
No. God created man in his image, and then he made woman as well for to be his plaything and slave. For it is written, and those who argue are harlots and dismal gigolos.
Come now, Mr. Nuttall. The two sexes came about purely by chance, a process of evolutionary necessity and reproductive convenience. Your ideas are as foolish as believing that Farcons can travel both ways through nebulae.
But if there isn't a God, where did the world come from? Can your whorish science answer that?
Yeah, but if God made the world, who made God, eh?
No. For it is written that God just is. That's how.
And whoever made God, and so on to infinity, plus one.
What if, maybe, we're all right? I think everything is true, no matter how wrong it may be. And that whatever you personally believe will happen to you when you die. Have you got a spare fag, mate?
Smoking is Beelzebub's amusement.
What, yes or no?
Look, have one of mine in, all right?
Well, it's always good to hear from people with fixed opinions. Personally, I live my life according to the Book of Lies by the occultist Aleister Crowley. And what I believe is that we should all slay the snake of certainty and exalt the horn of the doubt goat.
But need there have been a creation at all? Do we just feel the need for a beginning because of our fixed ideas about time? I fly in the face of oppressive Greenwich Mean Time by always setting my watch wrongly by exactly 2 hours.
Well, Einstein would have approved of that. His great achievements include inventing the atomic bomb, spending a night in a motel with Marilyn Monroe, and, of course, thinking up his theories of relativity.
Einstein's first theory of relativity stated that time moves more slowly if you spend it with your relatives.
And his second theory went on to say that, ooh, time flies by when you're enjoying yourself, doesn't it?
To put this to the test, we both went out yesterday. Stu, to have as good a time as possible, and me, to the annual family gathering at my gran's in Middlesbrough.
Right, I'm at the Chesterton World of Adventures on the Vampire Bat Ride, drinking a six-pack of Strike Lager. Ha ha ha!
Would you like another lemon squash, Richard?
Could I have coffee this time, Nanu?
Here's your lemon squash, nice and weak.
Thank you, Nanu.
Right, now I'm at a club in London and I'm about to take some of the mind-bending sex drug ecstasy to find out if E really does equal MC squared. Oh, wow, amazing, there are like, there's peas coming out of my face, ah!
No, Richard, this slide is that slide which is the slide of me and Auntie Jean on holiday in Newquay, wearing hats.
Hmm.
And this slide is that slide which is the slide of me and Jean again, still in UK, but look, I'm not wearing a hat now. I'm holding it in my hand. Can you see?
Oh, yeah, do that way, yeah.
Uncle Richard, do you know what the rudest word ever is?
No, Sarah, I don't know.
It is we. Wee-wee! You are fat.
Well, to me it seemed that my day with the family had taken 8 or 9 months. But on leaving the house, I found earth clocks had moved forward only 4 minutes.
And although I felt that my day was over in under 11 minutes, a medical examination of my liver, heart, kidneys, brain and reproductive organs showed that I'd aged 10 years. Einstein was right.
His work shows that if God had spent the week with his relatives, he would easily have found time to create everything in 6 days and still lie in on Sunday.
Well, as we seem to be moving dangerously close to a deist explanation of creation, let's see if Dr. Anton Dawkins' DNA has come up with anything yet.
Right. Well, I've unravelled over 60 feet of this microscopic DNA, excuse me, strand now, and I'm halfway through this studio audience here. Studio, could you just hold that, please? Don't drop that.
Any more messages yet, Dr. Dawkins?
Yes, we're getting one message through now. Apparently, Guinness is good for you. Also, the birds themselves did not actually play on the Mr. Tambourine Man single. And Betty the Will is taped behind the mirror. So I really think I'm getting somewhere now. If you could get back to me, I could just wrap this round your leg.
So what are the naturalists? They say evidence for evolution is all around us, hewn into the living rock of planet Earth, fossils, strata of rock of different ages, and a scrawled message saying Ian Pterodactyl was here.
If we see the whole history of the universe as a single year, then man only arrived at 1 second to midnight on the 31st of December, by which time, though all the drink had run out, he did get to snog the girls and see Andy Stewart sing Auld Lang Syne on TV.
Thanks, Rich, but right now I'm standing here,
deep in the bowels, literally, of a stained glass and Cotswold stone mock-up of evolutionist Charles Darwin. And at over 900 feet tall, this is the biggest model of a 19th century scientist in the world today. And it's been made especially for us at The Inexplicable World. But why? What bearing does Darwin have on today's programme to make this incredible model worth building? Let's find out!
1836. Charles Darwin arrives back in Britain after a five-year voyage around the world. He's greeted at the dock by his old friends Dr. Charles Lyell and Professor Joseph Hooker.
Ha-ha! Charles, welcome home!
Tell us, Darwin, how was your voyage?
Fan-blooming-tastic, mate. Sun, sea, sand, senoritas. All the native girls with no bras nor nothing. Nice! All-inclusive, a la carte, and once I shouted spaghetti at this Brazilian bloke. Everyone laughed. I tell you, I'm skint now, though.
In that case, Charles, it's a shame you didn't find time to do any scientific studies. Scientific pamphlets sell for anything up to 4 old pence old money these days.
That gives me a little idea.
That night, after an evening on the funny cigarettes with his friend Julian Jules Verne, Darwin set to his work.
Galapagos. Yeah, that sounds like a real island. What if I say that the action of the worms there helps form vegetable mould? That should cause a stir.
Each night, Darwin wrote a new pamphlet, and they began to outsell all others.
Mr. Darwin's latest pamphlet is an amazing pamphlet.
Yes, to think, similar finches on different islands have beaks specially adapted for their habitat.
Yes, it could almost be a cartoon in the Punch magazine. Charles, have you met Sir John Stuart Mill?
Ah, Darwin, I love that bit with the coconut cracking crabs. They're great! A bit scary.
Cheers, Millsy. Have you met my friends? This is Bernice and this is Shirley. Nice, eh?
But public demand and a life of shameful excess put Darwin under increasing pressure from his publisher.
Dogs that catch fish. Orchids variously fertilised by insects. This is no good to me. This is the 1870s, Chaz. Get real. Your public expect better than this.
I can't think of anything else, Mandy. I've lost it. Give me another sachet of opium, please.
Excuse me, Mr. Darwin. We've come to repossess the jacuzzi.
No. All right, Mandy, listen. I'll say that man is descended from apes and baboons, all right?
That is the most outrageous and offensive idea I've ever heard. I love it! It'll sell a million!
Yeah, right. Any chance of an advance, man?
Let's see how the debate's going.
Our planet is just a series of atoms and chemicals that happen to fuse in the chaotic void.
Yeah, but these chemicals you're on about, right, where did they come from? Who made them, slaphead?
Dr. Gow Jones, we have listened to your fantastical theory for 3 or 4 minutes now, and frankly, it sounds like something dreamt up by Kenny Everett or Barry Cryer. But where, Jezebel, is your proof?
Well, there are the indisputable observations of generations of physicists and astrologers and reams of geological evidence, fossils, strata of rocks, which prove conclusively that I am right.
I am not seduced by your true facts.
But what if the laws of science themselves are somehow wrong, or affected by magnets from outer space or a telepathic ray? Then perhaps we're all wrong. We'll be back for their conclusions at the close of the show. But where does humanity itself spring from? And are we capable of creating life?
Yes, Richard, the spotless Einstein family copybook that you're so fond of was soiled, wasn't it, by the activities of Albert's infamous half-brother, Frank Einstein, who tried to create his own half-human monster out of discarded body parts.
Yes. No one must be allowed to try to create human life. Outside the bounds of a holy marriage, of course. One of the universe's most timeless wonders has to be the birth of a little baby.
Unless you have to watch it, in which case it's one of the most disgusting and offensive things you'll ever experience.
But where do babies come from?
A 19th century Austrian couple claimed to have found their baby under a gooseberry bush. What they'd actually found was a gooseberry. But they raised it as one of their own anyway. And the hairy fruit grew up to be someone the whole world knew only too well. Adolf Hitler. Chancellor of Nazi Germany.
Test tube babies are the product of the unholy union of humans and test tubes. Unfortunately, the half-human, half-glass freaks cannot survive in the wild. Cracking in hot water, shattering in crates during family moves, and being smashed into fireplaces after Russian meals.
In modern Japan, it's already possible to electronically synthesize human babies without involving any real parents. But the Japanese emperor has banned this practice as immoral, which is ironic when you remember what the Japanese did to Allied prisoners during World War II. But in general, babies come from an egg fertilized by sperm inside the womb of a female human.
Now we just need one more piece of information before we can conclude. So over to Peter Fenn's Hammond Organ Believe It or Not file. Peter!
Believe it or not, the evolutionary missing link has only been missing since 1906, when careless museum curator Ken Zetti left it in a plastic bag on the bus.
Thanks, Peter. And this week's Hammond organ music was?
It was A Walk in the Black Forest.
By?
That's by Jankowski.
So now it's time to answer the big one. Where does everything come from?
Yeah, and how are we going to do that exactly?
Well, I've been told in my ear that Anton Dorkin has found something unusual in his DNA.
Yes, the DNA strand has proved to be much longer than I expected. I've had to leave the audience, unravelling it behind me, and I'm now in the rooftop restaurant of the giant 900-foot Charles Darwin model. I'm just unravelling the last bit now. Here we go. The hidden ultimate message in our DNA is, if you want to know where everything comes from, then Ian, you know, from the party, is correct.
Well, that's a turn up. Let's go back into the isolated soundproof box, where the debaters remain as yet unaware of the historic turn of events outside.
No. Hold on. You know, I think maybe Ian's got it after all.
Of course, that super concentrated thing didn't make sense. I'm with Ian.
I am a rude upstart and must be punished.
Ian, you are right.
Oh.
Now, what was it you said again?
Hold on. I know, I believe there's some sort of creator, God, Buddha, call it what you will, but not in the traditional Bible sense. What if the world was created by a huge force like electricity, a bit like in Star Wars? Have you got any bread or a biscuit?
Well, there we go. We all know now how everything was created.
But we'll be back next week to answer another of life's inexplicable mysteries.
So there you have it, friend. That's where everything comes from. And you know, I've been a-thinking this last half hour. Perhaps I was wrong. Perhaps the world is a stage after all. A stage we must all pass through on the journey that is ourselves. Join me, Lionel Limbrod, again next time for more probings into this, my inexplicable world.
Lionel Nimrod's Inexplicable World featured Stuart Lee, Richard Herring, Rebecca Front and Armando Iannucci, with Tom Baker as Lionel Nimrod. It was written by Richard Herring and Stuart Lee and produced by the inexplicable Sarah Smith.
Attention, at this moment you are now listening to
Lionel Nimrod's Inexplicable World.
Brought to you by www.bestoffan.net.